Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Bettering your business takes working with the best. With the James Hardie Alliance, you gain access to leads, training, networking, and support from the number one brand of siding in North America. Achieve new levels of success by joining the James Hardie Alliance today.
Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast for the Dutch Grand Prix at Zandvoort, which has just concluded, and I'm being joined here by Samantha. Samantha, haven't spoken to you for a while on the podcast. Happy to be back after the summer break.
Yeah, really glad to be back. I think we're all refreshed and ready to get back at it.
Yes, definitely ready to get back at it. We are joined by a new guest on the podcast, Daniel Bechtold from Brazil. Daniel, glad to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Hello, Anton. Hello, Samantha. Nice to be here in the podcast finally and joining you guys on this wonderful project that is F4Cast and all the community that you bring together and all this stuff. So it's nice to be here.
That's nice to hear. I guess that after the summer break, before getting into this race weekend, it might be worthwhile to go back into some of the news stories that have been following during this summer break. And first of all, I guess the major one to talk about is Carlos Sainz joining Williams for next season. Sam?
Yeah, very exciting. I think it's a win for Williams, definitely. Very big driver that they were managed to land. So I think Williams is, although maybe this weekend wasn't the greatest, but I do see a lot of promise and optimism moving forward. I think the team itself has a lot of really good things working with them, and that clearly must have influenced the decision on Sainz's end to be there for the next year.
Yeah, I think James Vowles even claims to have the best driver lineup for next year. Daniel, do you agree on that, or do you see that slightly different?
I don't think it's the best driver lineup, but it's definitely a great lineup for 2025. I was a little bit surprised when Sainz joined Williams, because I was, in my personal thought, I was thinking that he would maybe join Mercedes. But I see Mercedes is going directly to Andrea Kimi Antonelli. I think that's a little bit early for him. He just skipped F3 and all the stuff, but and he just managed in the last couple races to perform in F2. But okay, maybe he will be joining Mercedes, and that's why I think that Sainz has went to Williams. But I think they have a great lineup for next season. I'm definitely looking forward to looking how the car is going to deliver, and also the drivers as well.
I guess there was already a slight slip of the tongue from Toto Wolff about announcing Antonelli for next weekend, but I guess right. We'll hear about that. It's Antonelli's birthday, actually, by the way, today. I guess we'll have to wait 1 week to be talking about that when it's officially announced. What was also officially announced is that Oliver Oakes is going to be, well, already is, the new team principal for Alpine. I guess we knew after Belgium that they were going to announce a new team principal. They seem to be doing that about every year. And what do you think? What do you think, Sam?
I mean, we'll see. Time will really tell. I think that Alpine has a lot of things that they need to look at adjusting, or maybe just take an honest look at their circumstances. They haven't had a very good season. And like you said, I mean, that was a subtle little bit there that you mentioned. Yes, they've gone through quite a few team principals. I think that that's a reflection of a larger issue in the garage. So I'm hoping that maybe with this change that we'll see some positive things come to light with that. We should also mention the fact that there was another change actually recently when it comes to the second driver for next season, and that's Jack Doohan, who signed with Alpine for next year as Gasly's teammate. So I think that I think Jack is a great driver and he can bring a lot of potential into the season for them, and hopefully with the team principal signing as well, maybe we see something good come out of Alpine for next year. I'd like to hope so. I'd like to see that.
What do you think about Jack Doohan getting that second seat at the Alpine, Daniel?
I think it's good, you know, but I didn't see any other drivers that could be potentially better than Ocon for them to join. So I definitely think that Jack Doohan is a good choice for them. But except that the thing that Alpine is not very consistent when it comes to, as Sam and you were talking about, team principals, and having a new team principal is a good, definitely good thing for them now, I guess. But the Brazilian commentators were saying on the TV channel today, and I didn't see this before, but they said that on the way in the situation that Alpine is in right now, they are managing to have better grid positions up until 2027. I don't know who said this. I guess it was the new team principal and all this stuff, but yeah.
I think he was claiming that they're going to be fighting for podiums again in 2027. This is what Oliver Oakes said, if I'm not mistaken, which, let's see. Like Sam, like you were saying, time will tell, I guess. And talking about team principals, I think the other one to mention is that Jonathan Wheatley was announced as, well, actually he was first announced by Red Bull as leaving, and Audi was, they announced that he was going to Audi, and Audi was, I guess, not really prepared for that message coming out yet out in the open, but they did later confirm that he will be their team principal and working alongside Matteo Binotto, who I guess will be, I don't know his exact role, but I suppose Wheatley will be the team principal, which I guess was the job that he was after all along. And obviously wouldn't get a Red Bull, so he's going to be in that position for Audi, which I personally think is very exciting.
I agree. I think that strengthens Audi quite considerably, and it becomes for Red Bull another. I think that was a pretty significant loss for Red Bull. I mean, he has played a very large role in their development and their success. So I don't know where they're going to replace him. They will need to, with Newey leaving and now with Wheatley, I think there's going to be a significant empty space and a role or roles that do need to be filled on that side, and something that provides, once again, a lot of optimism for Audi. I think that they definitely have a lot of excitement coming behind them when they join F1.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be interesting to follow and see what else happens at Red Bull, who comes on board, and if there's any other team members leaving. It's also going to be interesting to await the official announcement of where Adrian Newey is going. But all news aside, I think it's time to roll into this weekend's race weekend, and let's first talk a little bit about the practice sessions. And I think going into the weekend, it was already predicted that weather conditions were going to be very variable, and I think we already saw that on the Friday. So we had a pretty wet free practice session one. We then had a much drier free practice session two, which actually turned out to be the only practice session that was somewhat representable towards qualifying and towards the race, because it was the only dry running which we did get, and in the end, yeah, quali and the race would also be dry. So FP2 was basically the only real training session to build on, which is interesting because, you know, in a normal race weekend you usually get three sessions to gather data from, and it's only in the sprint weekends where you get one, but this basically was also only one training session, which for the teams not so nice, for us as fans usually spices things up a little bit. Free practice session three was not such a good session for the teams. Well, I would say that was twofold, partly because of the weather conditions, but also because of what happened to Logan Sargeant, who basically mistook part of the grass as being part of the track, I suppose.
I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, it is true. It is true. I mean, this was definitely a driver error by the looks of it. And I'm a little surprised, although I'm not surprised at, unfortunately, these situations happening with Sargeant. I'm surprised that he did that. I think that was definitely a driver error, that considering the conditions and the fact that we know that, I mean, at that point when it's wet, if your tires are hitting the grass, the gamble that you're taking at that point is pretty high that you're going to lose control of the car. Daniel, what were your thoughts about that?
Yeah, about this crash, I think it's a very difficult track, especially in these conditions. Like, it was showers all over the weekend, you know, and that the grip on the track was not as good as they were used to in this track. And you know, you have a lot of curbs, you don't have a lot of straights besides the main straight, and he happened to crash there, and it was a big time, and I just think that the team work was...
Football fans, the wait is over. Playoff football is back in action this weekend, and now with Bet365, you can get in on it too. Starting Thursday, Bet365 is offering to double your money with a super boost on one or more passing yards in the Denver versus Buffalo game. That's right, all it takes is one single yard. So even if your team doesn't start strong, you can. Only with Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Select markets only. Minimum, maximum, wager, and fixed boost percentage applies. Super boost for single bets only. T&Cs and restrictions apply.
Pretty good, because I didn't think that they were going to have the car in the race. I was just thinking that they were going to sit out the car for this race, because it was a big crash.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah, and actually they did do that before too, not having a or not even having a spare chassis, but they did manage to. We even thought at some point they were gonna make it into qualifying, which ultimately they didn't. Another driver that was on the back foot starting from the practice sessions was Carlos Sainz, who had some gearbox issues, or even some power unit issues, it looked like, because when they were deassembling the car, they didn't only deassemble the gearbox, but basically the whole car seemed to be up for revision. But that didn't help him, because that was actually in free practice session two, which, like I was saying, was the only real session that was representative of the conditions of what we would see later on in the weekend on the Saturday and the Sunday. And I guess that sort of brings us into the Saturday, which was qualifying session, which I guess ahead of the weekend, we all know that the track, like you were saying, Daniel, it doesn't have a lot of straights. The straight that it has is not very long, and it's quite a narrow track. So we knew that overtaking would be quite hard. We had a lot of overtakes last year at Zandvoort, but that was... I think due mostly to weather conditions and a lot of changeable conditions, dry, wet. So we knew that this year with the dry weather, if we would have dry weather, it would be pretty tough to overtake. So that brought a lot of emphasis on the Saturday, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was an interesting qualifying, that's for sure. And starting in Q1, we saw obviously Ricardo out, and we saw Ocon out. And for Ocon with Alpine, I mean, he felt like the car's handling was, I believe he called it a disaster for his outing. I think he was quite surprised that he was out in Q1. Going into Q2, we saw a couple of surprises, didn't we? We saw drivers that we don't typically expect to see out in Q2, one being Hamilton and the other being Sainz. Daniel, what were your thoughts about Q2?
Oh, about Q2, I mean, I was very surprised at Hamilton being out in Q2, especially because on the only free practice that we managed to see cars actually delivering there. The Mercedes were on the top three positions, you know. And and I really thought that given that their performances on the last couple races, I thought, oh, they're definitely going to Q3 and they're going to make it to the race, which which we pointed at my forecast forecast. And but yeah, I was definitely not expecting this, and also his penalty in Q1 for being in the apex for Paris. I was not really sure during the broadcast. I thought that he was not actually in the apex, so I did not see that coming. And Sainz also out. I was pretty much thinking that was because of the gearbox issues, but he had a good first Q1 there. But in the Q2, I don't know what happened. He lost the rear. He lost the rear wheel in the first curb, so that was pretty much it. And he didn't have enough time to have another lap. But yeah, it was definitely not what I was expecting. I was expecting this both drivers going on into Q3.
Well, you mentioned your forecast prediction there. A little spoiler, the two of you actually predicted the same podium, so it wasn't only you.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I was going to mention, I didn't know you actually chose the same podium as me, Daniel, but I was going to say earlier when you were mentioning your results, I feel your pain. I really do.
Yeah, it's the exact same pain. Your scores were also pretty similar, but we'll get into that later. Yeah, it's actually interesting because during the session I thought that they already did away with investigating Hamilton. I thought that he wasn't going to get the grid penalty, but I do think I looked at it a couple of times, and I do think, yeah, he was not in the apex, but like getting out of that corner, he was on the racing line, and Perez couldn't take the corner as going out of the corner couldn't go wide, I do understand that penalty. Very surprising indeed to see the two of them not making it into Q3. Sam, when we were in Canada, I think Sainz also didn't make it into Q3.
Yeah.
But we will get to that later. He did have a pretty good recovery race on the Sunday. But another thing to mention, and you already, noted it at the beginning of the podcast, but Williams had a horrible day on the Saturday, not only with the crash of Sargeant, but also after Albon, who had a great qualifying. And if we take it into a bigger picture, you know, and if we don't only look at this race weekend, I guess it's a very positive sign that with the updates, the Williams performed very well, at least the Williams of Albon. He made it to P8 in Q3, but was later disqualified because they measured the floor to be, the floor was updated, so it was an upgrade for this weekend, and it was found to be too wide and thus illegal, and therefore he had to start at the back of the grid. I thought he was going to have to start at the pit lane, but because he was disqualified, Parc Fermé rules never even applied to him because he wasn't officially part of the session as he was disqualified, so had to start from the back, even behind Logan Sargeant. A pretty bad Saturday for Williams, although you could take some positives from it going into the rest of the season, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was quite a significant upgrade package they came in with this weekend, like you mentioned, having the floor upgrade, that's a pretty big upgrade. And then they also had new side pod designs design as well that they've come into. So they were making a bold statement, obviously. However, it didn't work in their favor with respect to the floor. But I, like you said, Antona, I completely agree. I don't think that it discredits the fact that the car clearly has pace, and although it was unfortunate that he was disqualified, I think that they'll bounce back from that. I think that the bigger picture here is that they're making upgrades that are improving the pace of the car, and they're building something that has the ability to compete in the top 10, and I think at least the bottom part of the top 10, and that's a much better conversation that you can have than if you were to look back and over the last several years with Williams. So I do think that although it was really disappointing to see Albon disqualified in qualifying, to see him also achieve a pretty great result was something that was great. I mean, even in the very beginning of Q3, he was up at the top, and that was really impressive. So definitely some positives that you can take out of that.
Yeah, I think that Williams and especially Albon, they're going great actually in the less races in the qualifying sessions. Albon consistently reaching Q3, but unfortunately there was this penalty, and I was hoping to see if he could get points in this race, but unfortunately that wasn't the case. And but yeah, P14, it is good. Especially right in front of Ocon and Tsunoda. Tsunoda was thinking he was going to be also better in this race, but yeah, it was a good grid position for Albon, and I hope that Williams goes better in the second part of the season.
Well, it's an interesting thing.
I was hoping for a higher finishing. Oh, sorry, Sam. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it's an interesting thing actually, because we were touching on this earlier with Sainz coming on board for 2025, and what I find. If you really put it into perspective, I mean, they're making significant upgrades that are improving the pace. They have, at least in my opinion, a very well-educated, well-versed team principal coming out of James Vowles. You now have a driver pairing that probably, although I wouldn't necessarily say it's the strongest driver pairing on the grid, it is their strongest driver pairing that they have had in a considerable period of time, where you see two drivers, both with the experience and the capability. And so if we look ahead at 2025 and we put all those factors into place, I think that, I mean, if we were to even consider now and you take Logan Sargeant out of the mix and you put a driver like Sainz in that seat, and then you have an Albon and Sainz competing at this level with a car that's increasing in pace, I mean, who knows where the points that they can achieve, especially in 2025, let alone if that was considered in 2024.
I think that's a very good point you're making. I think it is the strongest driver pairing that they have had for a long time. I think you need to go back to Bottas Massa to find a driver pairing that was comparable, and that's indeed a very good sign for them. So I think they can just discard this weekend. I was going to say, I was also hoping Albon to finish higher. I had him on P10 in my predictions, but who knows? Maybe for Monza. Yeah, I think other than that, the other surprising thing for me was that Magnussen qualified 15th, but with Hamilton having the grid drop and then Albon as well, he would have started 13th, but he actually started from the pit lane, and that sort of brings us into the Sunday. Trying to make a little bridge here, Sam. let's go talk a little bit about the start of the race today. I guess the obvious topic here would be Norris starting from pole.
It's funny, every time you laugh before you're about to say it, say something, I kind of have an idea as to exactly where the subject is going to go. And in this case, I definitely knew. Yeah, once again, we see a situation where Norris has a poor start. And we talked about this, I believe, just in the last episode, the fact that the consistency in that area in terms of his starts is something that we are continuing to see. In this case, I'm not quite sure exactly what it was it may have been I'm not certain if it was an issue with the car itself or himself, but that clearly was a disadvantage to him and an advantage to Max. He was able to take the lead, but although that took place, I mean, the one thing that's undeniable from the race, and I would say overall from this weekend, is just the pace of the McLaren car. I mean, it's incredible. And they did come in this weekend with significant upgrades as well. So they came in with upgrades. They clearly worked to their advantage. And although his start wasn't great, clearly his finish was, which we'll touch on later. But I think also when we talk about the start, we saw pretty much everybody, with the exception of Tsunoda, Hamilton, and Bottas, and I believe Magnussen was on hards, but everybody else on the grid, especially the front 10 there, were on mediums to start. And the only other thing I take from the beginning was We also saw Piastri with an unfortunate start as well. Russell was able to seek an advantage there. Daniel, what were your thoughts on the first few laps?
I was thinking that maybe it was this recurring Norris problem with the start of the race, but I noticed that both cars had the same problem. Like, they didn't have the reaction time right there. I don't know if it was the drivers or maybe the car that is not at this point. And because they reached out the first curb, and it was Max Verstappen was just a car ahead of Norris, so it's not something that we see very often here. But even in when he doesn't start very well, they come to the first curb mainly side by side with each other. And yeah, I was expecting that right before the race. I think okay, we know that Norris is not going to take off very well, but let's see how the race goes. And it could be, I think that he could have a better gap by the end of the race, which was 23 seconds, because he stood like behind Verstappen up until lap 18, and they reached out the gap by 1 second. He didn't go further than that, but yeah, it was definitely not a good start. And Piastri also had not had a great start in the race, and it managed to be not very good for the remainder of the race. He was struggling behind Russell, and he was struggling behind. He was struggling with Leclerc coming after him, and both of them really pitted before Piastri. And I was not very happy with his strategy as well, because he managed to extend his first stint and just go and put on his hards. Way, I think 10 laps after, maybe, I don't know, I guess it was 10 laps after the drivers that he was racing with, Leclerc and Russell. And I don't think it was a great strategy, because it pretty much ruined his race and his chances of passing on Leclerc right after.
Yeah, I think actually going back to the start, the reaction time of Norris wasn't, I think, the problem. It was the acceleration for the first, let's say, towards the first corner, where he was very slow. And but I also couldn't see that he had any wheel spin or anything. So yeah, it was definitely very interesting. But if you actually take all the starting, all the grip positions, let's say, looking towards the Tarzan corner, the first corner, everybody on the inside of the corner basically had a great start, and everybody on the left hand side didn't. So Verstappen overtook Norris, but then also Russell overtook Piastri, Leclerc overtook Perez. The only one breaking that chain was Stroll, starting on 8th, who actually dropped places. Sainz, starting on 10, also gained a position. So it was interesting to see that shuffle into each other. And but I guess, yeah, coming back at what Sam was already saying, I think starting on the Saturday, it was already pretty clear that McLaren seemed to have a quicker car on average. And I think Norris, instead of getting frustrated with himself, he put his head down, and he had a good race, and he did what he had to do, rather than getting frustrated and throwing things away, which he has done previously. But interesting. Daniel, you were talking there about the first sequence of pit stops for the drivers. I think that was definitely key, and I think before the race, many people were already thinking that it would be undercutting would be the best strategy here. As we were saying, like, overtaking on track is difficult, so pitting early would be desirable, and we saw two cars who did that, and I think both of them ended up having a pretty good race. And it was, I'm talking about Leclerc and about Hamilton, who both, I think both pitted on lap 24. Leclerc, we'll get to talk about him in a bit. But also Hamilton, of course, starting further back, but made up a lot of positions during the race. And I think it was definitely partially because of the strategy. And I said let's talk about Leclerc a little bit later, but why not talk about him right now?
Might as well now.
Personally, I, for me, it was Leclerc that was driver of the day, not Norris.
I agree with you 100%. I completely agree with that. I think that although Norris had a fantastic day, the thing is that he overtook Verstappen, but he didn't have as much of a disadvantage as Leclerc did going into it. I think that Leclerc ultimately had a fantastic race. He was able to capitalize when he was able to. The one thing that I would mention is with Ferrari, he had the pace of the McLaren for, I think it was nearly 30 laps. It was comparable. So he had the pace in the car. He was able to capitalize on improving his results. I think that the pit stops were well-timed. I think overall, he had a really great race. And coming out of qualifying and being as disappointed as he was, to come out with a result where he landed the podium, I think that that's a very outstanding weekend for him and for Ferrari. I think also for Sainz as well. He had a great weekend. He had a great race in the sense that he was coming from 11th and he managed to finish in 5th. I think that is a very good result for him. And yeah, if we look at Hamilton, again, similarly to Leclerc, was in a position where he was, well, I wouldn't say similarly to Leclerc, probably more closer to Sainz, but he was in a position where at the very beginning, he capitalized on making some serious overtakes to get ahead from the start. He had some decent pit stops, although he was complaining in certain areas of the race that he was slow on the straights. I mean, that's something that we expect from Hamilton in some regards. I still think that at the end of the day, he had a pretty good result that maybe even he himself didn't expect.
Yeah, and you know, if you take it back to the Belgian Grand Prix and you look at Leclerc there starting from pole, where you just felt, or you just knew, or at least I felt, that he was never going to make the podium, even though he started on pole. And starting today from sixth position, I had never thought that he would have that race. I mean, at the time when Piastri overtook Russell, I think it was around lap 40, 41, I thought Piastri is just going to, you know, he's just going to get towards Leclerc and overtake him. And then he got into DRS range several times, but he just couldn't, couldn't overtake him. I don't know whether to really say that Piastri didn't have the greatest of races, or whether it was just a tremendous fight by Leclerc. How would you, from which perspective would you look at it, Daniel?
I agree with you what you guys said earlier. I think Leclerc was the driver of the day, definitely, because firstly because of the strategy, the pits, and the first part of the race, he pitted a lot earlier than Piastri, and he managed to overtake. And when Piastri pitted, he was 7 seconds behind Leclerc and also Russell in between them. And yeah, it was definitely a great strategy. And when Piastri overtook, as you said, when Piastri overtook Russell and was just behind Leclerc, and it was 20 laps to go, I just thought, and also the Brazilian commentator said, oh, it's a matter of time for Piastri going to Leclerc, and they were also comparing Piastri going to Verstappen, because it was maybe 7 seconds ahead of Verstappen. I was just comparing, okay, maybe Piastri is going to Verstappen,
right,
but he never made it through Leclerc, and also he didn't obviously have the race pace to go to Verstappen, and given the conditions and the machines that they had, both Ferraris and McLarens, I think that it was the best of the results that they could get in this race. So yeah, Leclerc for me was definitely the driver of the day.
I think one of the other things too, in contrast, is you see Russell, and Russell started in a really great position. He had a great start, and then things just fell apart, and Leclerc, you know, Ferrari and Leclerc obviously capitalized on that as well, because one of the significant moments that he had that gave him the ability to secure the podium, in my opinion at least, was the undercut on Russell. And then at the same time, in contrast, Russell's slow pit stop. So I think that also gave him the ability to be able to capitalize on the undercut and secure the podium. For Russell, though, I mean, if we're looking at that as well, I mean, that was a situation where for him, he started in P4, he ends in P7. Hamilton is, you know, finished right behind him and had started in P14. And I think for Russell, one of the things that he mentioned after the race was he felt like he really had an issue with his tires. He felt like he had no grip. He was slow on all three tires. And there was a question. I was scratching my head a little bit on that very last pit stop and why they decided to pit him towards the end of the race. Why not just keep him out there? Maybe that was the reason why. What were your thoughts, Daniel?
That was a thing that I was scratching my head as well, because for me it was definitely not a great strategy for both Mercedes, because I don't recall it, but he was right behind Piastri and he pitted, right? I don't remember, or he was just past, or he was past Sainz, I don't know. But
I think he was indeed behind Piastri, but yeah, it's actually interesting to see that from, let's say, the first 12 cars, they were the only, or the 12 first finishers, they were the only two who went for a two stopper, and going into this weekend, I think everybody was quite excited about both McLaren and Mercedes, but it is indeed quite worrying that both the Mercedes, well, of course Hamilton had a slightly different strategy, also starting on the softs, and he actually made those last for 23 laps, which is decent, but both Mercedes going for a two-stop and complaining about tire wear after the race, I don't know if that's such a good sign.
Yeah, I don't think they have managed their tires very well. I don't know if what was the degrading level of the tires, but also Hamilton, he was right. He was behind Perez, and I think he had a gap that he could reach up until the end of the race. But he pitted for soft tires, and he was just 23 seconds behind him. And okay, his race is pretty much done. And also Russell did the same thing. And I don't think that he was going to be overtook, given that track conditions and difficult overtakes, he was going to be overtook by Sainz and Perez. So I don't think it was a great strategy for them. So yeah, pretty, how can I say, pretty deception and race for both Mercedes there.
Yeah, and then they also saw the fastest lap being taken away from them, because it looked like a long time like Hamilton would get that, being on soft tires. Well, actually, Russell also ended on soft tires. I was betting on Mercedes, or one of the Mercedes getting that, but in the end, Norris managed to snatch that away from them as well, which was, I don't know if you want to call it risky. I mean, I guess he made sure that he had a full battery in that last lap in order to take it. But yeah, maximum score for Norris. And even though I mentioned earlier, for me, it was Leclerc that was driver of the day, Norris definitely made the day count for him and for McLaren. And I think going into this, or during the summer break, I've heard various people talk about whether Norris is still the better driver at McLaren, but I think this weekend altogether, if we take qualifying, where on that first flyer in Q3, both Norris and Piastri were pretty close together, but then on that last lap, Norris really made it count. He had pole in the end by 6/10 of a second or so, even slightly more than that. And the Sunday was just also, of course, he gets a great part of the race where he can drive in fresh air. But then again, I mean, there was also some pressure on the shoulder after the race start, and having Verstappen in front of him. So all together, he executed a great race weekend, and Piastri slightly less so.
Yeah, and if we look at the stats right now, like, it just, first of all, if we look at the stats when it comes to the race, I mean, this was the biggest gap between first and second all season. At the end of the race, I believe it was 22.8 seconds. Now, mind you, I do believe that Max had expressed the fact that he was having difficulty with the car, with his car, so that may have been an issue. But regardless of the fact, I mean, that is a significant gap. And then the other thing that I would say to mention when it comes to Norris is we're now looking at a situation where the gap for the championship has narrowed itself. We have 9 races to go. The gap in itself, there's a difference of 70 points. I mean, do we believe, and I'll put this to both of you, do we believe that there's potential that he could very well be crowned the world champion this year? Or do we think that at this point, even though the gap is 70 points, it's not enough to secure it?
I think that, of course, there is a championship, there is the chance, but in order for Lando to close the gap to Verstappen, Verstappen needs to have a DNF by the end of the year, and he rarely his pass behind P2 or P3. And if I was going to bet, I was going to bet on a championship for Verstappen. But I think that Norris has a clear chance of winning this championship as well. If he manages to, you know, win a lot more races, and maybe Verstappen does not perform well in this Red Bull. I was going to talk about Red Bull's performance, but I will let Anton talk about his predictions for Norris or Verstappen if he has a chance as well.
Well, what I was going to ask you instead was, okay, all right, you would put your money on Verstappen still winning the championship, but for the Constructor Championship, if you would have to put your money now on one of the two teams, and today Red Bull took 26 points and McLaren 38, I think the difference is about 30 points right now in favor still of Red Bull. But if you would honestly have to put, let's say, all the money you have on one of the teams, and you'd have to do that now, who would you put it on?
Oh, all the money that I have is harsh, man. But okay, but
I know, I was trying to build up the pressure a little bit.
Of course, yeah, but I think I was going to put my money on McLaren's as well. They're both performing very well. You can see them pass like P4, P3, and also they had a pretty good. If I guess Piastri had overtook Leclerc, I think they had a pretty good chance to make the P1 and P2 in this weekend, given Verstappen's performance there. And also Perez is a lot of pressure, you know, as Isaac Hadjar is performing not very good and very good at F2, and he is probably coming to Red Bull or the Racing Bulls next year, and also be crowned the champion maybe in the next couple of weekends there. But yeah, I think that Perez is under a lot of pressure. He manages to perform better this weekend, but I guess McLaren's are performing very better in this, and given the update that they bring to this weekend, also I think that performance is better and that they reach out better to points under these conditions.
Sam, for you, not all your money, but if you get it wrong, they'll take your dog and your cat from you. So who would you put your cat on? Try to make it even harsher.
I just really want to know extreme. Who would you.
I know.
I would put my money on McLaren. I think that at this point in time, they have in comparison when it comes to the constructors, as we know, it's not just about a singular driver, it's about the team. And I think that if we're really mapping out the strength of the teams in comparison, I think that McLaren showing that they are clearly the stronger team at this point going into the final 9 races of the season. You have Piastri, who's won a race. You have Norris, who's won now 2. You have a car which clearly is showing that the pace is significant, the upgrades are working. You also have the strongest team or at the top of the list at this current moment in time in terms of pit stop. Although their strategies at times become questionable, I do think that they have improved, and I think that they are responding to some of the decisions that they've made previously through the season, and they're improving in those areas, which is good to see. I do believe that at the end of the day, we're probably going to see the Constructors' Championship go to McLaren. Now, again, who knows? But I do think that in comparison, if you're looking at Red Bull, you're looking at right now they're facing issues with the car. They're facing issues within the team in terms of the drivers. Although Max, obviously, we know, world champion, strong, Perez has not been consistent. And if you're looking back at the last easily 8 races, I mean, the point comparison is significant. One thing that we didn't actually mention is the fact that over the summer break, there was a lot of talk of the fact that Perez was going to be replaced, and that didn't happen. So now we look at a situation where he is going to be in it for the long haul of the season. And I think ultimately that is going to be probably the largest factor if they lose the constructors at the end of this season.
Well, look, no one's going to take your animals away from you. Let that be said.
Oh, but, you know, no one's going to take my animals away from me.
But I do just think it's extremely interesting that, you know, at the start of this season, who would have guessed? I think we were all expecting Red Bull to be dominant this year, perhaps also next year, up until 2026. And now, if both of you were pressured, you would really put your money on McLaren for the Constructor Championship. And I just think that's very interesting. And I do think, as we said, Verstappen still has the best cards for winning the Drivers' Championship. I do think that the races he's not going to win, which might be quite a few out of the nine that's left. I don't think Norris is going to win all of them. He's going to have trouble too. He's not as consistent yet to be winning the World Championship, but it is open. I mean, we are talking about it. We are debating whether it's possible, yes or no. And I think, a while back, nobody would have guessed that. So I think that's awesome. I think
that's very true.
In that regard, is in a great spot, and it's very exciting. And even on a race weekend, which perhaps didn't provide the most amount of action as we have seen in some of the other race weekends, I think in the end, all 20 cars finished, no safety cars whatsoever, no red flags during the qualifying session in the race. So in that regard, perhaps not the most exciting weekend, but as a battle for the championship, both for constructors and for the drivers, I think it's super interesting again to be watching Formula One. And it's great that we still have, I mean, and that's the funny thing, we've been talking about the calendar being very long, and it does feel very long in a year like 2023 when one team is super dominant. But to be honest, at this point, I can't get enough of it. And I'm even afraid that we don't have enough time left until regulations and power units change again. I think it should actually be postponed to 28 if we could, because the way things are right now, it's just super, super interesting. And like we were saying, you have a team like Williams who seem to be able to get a little bit further ahead in the midfield as well. These kind of changes are just super exciting. And maybe not the most action-packed weekend, but I do want to highlight one of the moments that we saw. I think from the onboard of Magnussen, where he was overtaken by Albon and then by Alonso, Stroll and Gasly as well. That was a funny shot, or funny, I guess, from the perspective of Kevin, it wasn't funny at all. But all five cars going through the first few. Or the last corner of the track, and the first one, that was a nice sight. No,
absolutely, absolutely, that was exciting.
Yeah, that was exciting coming out of that banking, and I think that banking reaching out to the main straight is very awesome. There, it reminds me of the IndyCar races as well, and both five cars coming out of that and together and battling for the who's going to be in front. It was pretty nice.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, just to kind of further what you mentioned there about it looking like IndyCar or just the view itself, I absolutely love seeing the driver cams on this track, because it's just, I mean, to see the track itself and how they have to adjust the cars, I find it really a really exciting and interesting viewpoint.
Yeah, definitely true. It's kind of funny. We have, I mean, the Netherlands is such a flat country, but then actually the track has a lot of height differences, or not so much, I guess, attitude differences. But yeah, like you're saying, within the corners, it's just, and like you mentioned, Daniel, that last corner, the Arie Luyendijk bocht, that's just, and that gyrocam, I didn't like it that much up until this circuit, but actually you're right, Sam. I mean, on this circuit, it just serves very well, and it gives you a great perspective on what kind of a roller coaster track it really is. I do think it's not the most suitable track for Formula One cars with how narrow it is, with how little overtaking opportunities there are. Although we did see Hamilton at some point also overtaking in the chicane in the but then again, yeah, it's also up for discussion whether the contract is going to be renewed for the track. Next year we're going to have a race there, but we're not sure if we're going to have one after that. Perhaps they're going to rotate Belgium and the Netherlands, which honestly I would hate to see. That I would honestly, first of all, I would never take Spa off the calendar, but I wouldn't take either one off the calendar. Let's see what's going to happen in the future. and what's going to happen after or starting from 26. Before we head into the scores, do we have anything else to mention about the race, Sam, Daniel?
I got one that was my what I was expecting in the race. It is I mean this 22.8 second gap between McLaren's and between Norris and Verstappen. It was a pretty huge gap, given that coming through this race, I was pretty much betting my money on the Red Bull of Verstappen, because if you remember in Spa last weekend before the break, they were coming with huge upgrades and his race pace was very good, but he had that grid penalty there for switching the engine and the stuff, and he had a pretty good race pace, but unfortunately overtaking in Spa is not very easy, so he couldn't manage to have a better grid position there. But I was expecting a lot from the Red Bulls in this race, given their upgrades and their performances during the weekend in Spa and also in the quali. So I don't know what you guys think, but I think it was a little bit weird, and I was not expecting this much of a gap. Of course, both could win, Verstappen or Norris. So I was pretty much, I didn't know, I changed it a couple of times in my predictions, but I was not expecting this gap, and especially I was not expecting this performance from Red Bulls.
Well, I already mentioned that the two of you had the same podium, but I also went with Verstappen for a win for exactly the reason that you're mentioning. Getting out of the Belgium weekend, I thought exactly the same as what you were saying. I thought that, you know, Verstappen there took pole by basically the same distance as Norris had this weekend from Verstappen. It was about 6 tenths. Then starting from 11th, he managed to finish ahead of Norris. So I really thought that the grid drop heavily influenced the final outcome. But I thought that Red Bull, or let's not say Red Bull, but say Verstappen, had a great weekend there in Belgium. So I was expecting the very same, and that the outcome is so different is for me very surprising, and also a confirmation that what we were saying during the past races, that McLaren might actually be quicker than the Red Bull. I've seen it being confirmed this weekend.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I agree. I feel the exact same way as you guys. I obviously picked Verstappen as my as the winner this weekend, and the same as the two of you. I went in clearly with the belief that it was going to be at least a strong race for Max, and unfortunately that wasn't the result, but we still have 9 races to go. So I think at this point, like we've touched on, when it comes to the season, everything is on the table, and I think that makes it really, really exciting to see. All right, Anton, so I think it's time, as always, let's go over the scores. But before we do that, how many people played this weekend?
Well, we had, again, more than 1,000 people playing Forecast. It was 1,060 people. And, well, what I would like to ask the two of you is, how many people do you think predicted this exact podium in this exact order? So with Norris winning, with Verstappen on the second step of the podium, and with Leclerc on the third spot, out of 1,060 people, how many people got that right? And if you get closest to the answer, that means you can pick whether you can start in the quiz or whether the other person starts in the quiz. So Sam, how many people went with this podium?
First of all, I'll mention before even that it's fantastic to have us talk about the fact that there's over 1,000 people playing the game at this point during the weekend. I mean, it's definitely, I compare it, like we look at even last year when we were talking about how many people were playing the game, and we've seen so much growth, and it's really, really cool. I think that cool is probably an understatement of a word to use, but I think it's just something to mention. Anyways, if I am looking at how many people, I think it's I think there's going to be quite a few people, to be honest with you. At least I hope. I am going to go with I'm going to go with, well, I'll say 87.
Oh. Okay. For me, firstly, I gotta say that the job that you guys are doing with the community, as well as I mentioned before in the starting of the podcast, it is really nice, the job that you guys do and the community that you're bringing together. We also send it to a lot of friends, and many people start playing and all this stuff, and it's nice to see the community growing and growing and all this stuff. So congratulations to you guys. It's really nice to be part of this community as well and being here. And for this podium, Norris, Verstappen and Leclerc, I don't think that many people guessed on Leclerc this time. I think that people were more guessing on Piastri or the Mercedes, so I was going to go with 8 people.
Yeah, I think that Leclerc was definitely the limiting factor here. And going back to what you were saying, thanks for the nice words about the community. I completely agree. Actually, Sam, this is the fourth race that we have over 1,000 people playing, yeah. With also more than 1,000 people playing for Belgium, for Hungary, and for the first race of the season, actually, in Bahrain. But getting back to your answers, Sam, I'm afraid I'm going to have to disappoint you. Daniel is a lot closer to the right answer. There were only 2 people who went with this podium.
Wow.
That's very few. It was actually the winner, and we'll hear who that is in a moment. And the person who finished P5, that was Alessandro Paglia from Italy. And those were the only 2 people that I guess, Daniel, I think it's a fair estimation that probably the people that did go with Norris, Verstappen, probably went with either Piastri or I think a lot of people went with Hamilton in higher positions. But we'll find out more about that during the quiz. The average score was around 38 points, 38.0 for this weekend. And the lowest score this weekend was 6.0. That gets us to the podium of this weekend. And actually we have 2 Kenyans on the podium. On P3 we have Kevin Mwamburi. He scored 74.3 points, and only 0.2 points away from that was Joby Mwani, also from Kenya. So they are P3 and P2, and that brings us to P1, and that was from Germany, Franziska Springweiler, and she scored 77.3 points. And as I was saying, she was one of those people who had a correct podium, and that got her, well, not only that got her the win, but that got her a very decent point tally already. Also a couple of first timers. It was the first time a Norwegian finished in the top 10. It was the first time that somebody from Fiji finished in the top 20. And it was the first time that somebody from Kazakhstan finished in the top 20. Not only that, it was also actually the first time anyone ever played from Kazakhstan and finishing in the top 20 straight away, finishing actually on P13. So that's a very good result. We actually had new players from 3 countries, Kazakhstan, as I already mentioned, and also from Gambia, and also from the Northern Mariana Islands. So 3 new countries in the rankings, and hopefully more countries to come. We have now people from 137 different countries that played this season. Looking at the season championship, so the championship for Forecast F1, we see that last time Rosario Finzi, his lead had shrunk to only 2 points towards Anneli Beume from the Netherlands. But actually, he got a very decent score this weekend. He went with a Norris win. He scored 57.1 points and remains P1. And the Frenchman now actually has a 24-point lead, but no longer to Anneli Beume. She drops from P2 to P3. She actually scored only 22 points. And who was previously P3, Sumit Jaiswal from India, he goes to P2 because he scored 43.9 points. So, a swap between P2 and P3. And if we look at the countries and accumulated points for the countries, we see that we now have 2 new countries entering the top 25. The first one being Zambia at P25, gaining 4 spots. And Kenya, who enters the top 25 at P18. They're actually moving up 14 positions. That's quite a lot. And you would ask, how so? We actually had, and the recent Grand Prix, I've been looking at how many or which countries we have the most players playing from. And for example, during the Belgian Grand Prix, we had 44 players being the maximum players from a country. Actually, the Netherlands and Zambia both had 44 people playing the game. This weekend, we had a lot of Kenyans joining the game. There were actually 111 people from Kenya playing. So that is the main reason that they got so many points and that they moved up 14 places in the rankings. So yeah, there you see the effect if you bring in a lot of your friends and family to play the game. You can actually really make up a lot of points. Yeah, at this rate, I don't know, if they would have started the season with this many players, I think they would have been on P1. But on P1, we still see Argentina leading. And on P2 is the Netherlands. And on P3, still Italy. But the gap between the Netherlands and Italy is growing, and the Netherlands is actually gaining on Argentina. So it's going to be interesting to see if they are able to remain the leaders.
It's going to be a tight battle
in this competition. Yeah, it is going to be. it's interesting. Looking at the high scores, not a lot of changes there. As I was saying, the highest score for this weekend was 77.3. So, yeah, most of the scores scored are not going to make it into the high scores. The only person entering a high score for their continent is Sammy Finn from New Zealand, who is now on P19 in Oceania with his 68.5 points for the Dutch Grand Prix. So that's the only person making it into the continental high scores. And I think that means it's time to look at our scores. And I already gave away a little bit from our predictions. And I think we can all conclude that none of us really got extremely good scores. So I think let's start with the points for our guest, Daniel. As we were saying, you had the same podium as Sam. So both of you went for Verstappen, Russell, Norris, which I thought was interesting. But I guess, yeah, like we were saying, actually, we were also quite optimistic about Mercedes going into this weekend. And with Russell, of course, even though being disqualified for Belgium, he had a very good weekend there, and he has been having a couple of good weekends. So I do understand. I'm definitely not going to criticize your neither of your predictions. But Daniel, you scored 27.6 points, and this weekend with that score, that put you in place 844.
My goodness. Yeah, well, I was definitely not expecting this this low points that I have. When I made my prediction, I thought, okay, I think this time is going to be the one that I'm going to be at least in the top 20. Well, I don't think this happened. But yeah, I was pretty much convinced that Mercedes was going to be a lot better in this weekend, as we spoke, by their performances in Spa and also their performance in Free Practice 2 as well. I think, okay, Russell is his time and he's going to be ahead of Norris. As we mentioned as well, Norris has not been the most consistent driver, so I didn't think that he was going to be P2, I guess. And because of Free Practice 2. But yeah, disappointing result. And also the penalties for Hamilton and Sainz had a huge part on this. And I never bet on Leclerc very well. He's always on like P5, P6 for my predictions. And he was P3. So yeah, things that actually... And I also bet a lot on Tsunoda. I always bet on him on P9, maybe P9 or P10. But yeah, not this time for him.
That's interesting because
I think that's similar
to me. Yeah, you were probably going to say that, Anton, is that that's similar to my strategy going into this weekend.
Yeah, and well, I think it's similar to all of our strategies because if I think if I look at it, all of us were thinking Red Bull, McLaren, and Mercedes, and not so much Ferrari. And with Ferrari finishing P3 and P5, yeah, we all lost a decent amount of points. But yeah, just to finish up on Daniel's standings in the competition for the season, you dropped from P316 to P342. So Yeah, I guess the good thing is we're going to have a new race on our hands very soon, so you'll be able to make up some new points.
Yeah, of course. And it was not it's not being the best season so far. Last year I started playing, I guess, from the third or fourth race, and I was having a pretty much better performance during the season. I guess one time I was I don't know if it was in the podium or fourth place. I guess in Las Vegas maybe, but I gotta check this. And but after that I was never in the top 25, maybe in the top 100, but yeah, this year is not going very well, such as last year.
So yeah, if people make these kind of claims, I'll always try to try to look it up. I don't see you on the maybe it was another race in Las Vegas. I'm gonna get back to you on that. I'm not 100% sure which race. Ah, it was Mexico. Look, yeah, you were P4 last season in Mexico.
Yeah.
So I think I guess that was your best score, which actually is better than any of my scores since the game has gone public. I think actually, Sam, you were fifth a couple of races ago. So that means that's also a better result from. Sam, you were also fourth on the Canadian Grand Prix. So I guess that means both of you have had a better score than I have ever had. So let's move on quickly. in the end, it's not only about winning. It's also about participating and having fun and thinking about the whole thing. Like we were saying, you and Sam thought quite alike for this weekend. Sam, you scored a few more points. Not a lot more. 29.3 was your final tally, which means you're P798 this weekend.
Yikes.
And that means you dropped from P45. What do you estimate?
Oh, you really want to make me feel the pain. Okay, I'm going to say probably in the 60s.
Yeah, that's fair. It's P66 that you're at now.
Yikes.
So, no, still in the top 100. I mean, it could have been.
Could have been worse.
It could have been, and I guess for Daniel, your aim should be to finish higher than where you finished last season. Last season, you finished 231st, so 342nd. There's still time. Myself, I scored a few more points. I had 38.8 points. I guess the reason for that mostly is that the rest of my podium was P2 Norris and P3 Piastri, so got some decent points for that. But I only finished P458 this weekend, and then actually I dropped out of the top 20. I was previously on P15, I'm now on P22, unfortunately. So I think it's for all three of us, it would be better just to move on to Monza. But before we do that, we are going to play the quiz. And well, just to introduce it for those that don't regularly listen, but Sam and Daniel are now going to guess how many people out of those 1,060 people that played predicted each driver correctly. So Daniel, you are allowed to choose whether you start with P1 or not, because you were closer to the amount of people that had the correct podium. So that means for P1 Norris, you can either go ahead and guess how many people had that right, or you can let Sam go ahead and let her choose first, whatever you want.
Okay, I'll let Sam go. I'll let Sam go with Dania. But I got my number.
By the way, we are playing for a prize, so the person that wins this quiz is going to hear his national anthem, his or her national anthem, at the end of this podcast.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, I'll let Sam go first in this one.
Okay. I am going to go with 13 people.
13 for Norris first? P1?
Yes, 13 for P1.
Okay, I guessed 451 for Norris P1. I guess it was a little bit high, but I don't know.
Okay. This is interesting. Sam, her guess is pretty far away from what it is, but Daniel, you're guessing even further away. The truth is somewhat in the middle, but that actually means that Sam gets the point because there was 200 people who had that right. So I guess technically 13 is closer to 200 than 451 is.
We're off to a great start, Daniel. We're off to a really great start.
Well, you know, you've got to also leave some room for improvement. So let's see. Daniel, for P2, Verstappen.
Okay, Verstappen, I'm going with 268 people in Verstappen P2.
Okay, I am going to go with 392.
All right, that means that you are drawing. You both have 1 point because there were 172 people that went with the P2 for Verstappen.
Oh, I'm surprised by that.
I guess I am too, in a way.
I would have thought, actually, that it would have been higher just because of the fact that it's the Dutch Grand Prix, but you never know.
Well, then let's see what you guys have for P3 Leclerc, Sam.
Well, we already know that only two people had the podium correct, so I'm going to go with a pretty low number here, and I'm going to go with 3.
Okay. I was going to go with 10 people, given that the podium that was the only two people, but I guess more people, maybe 10 people, predicted Leclerc on third. I don't know.
It was a few more than both of your guesses. It was still 40 people.
Oh my God.
That went with Leclerc on P3, but
that's
interesting.
10
is closer
okay.
to 40 than 3 is. So it's 1-2, and Daniel's up next for guessing how many people went with Piastri on P4.
Okay, for this I'm gonna go with 78.
Okay, I think that's a pretty good guess. I was going to think about the same, but I'm going to go a little higher since everybody, the numbers seem to be high. Well, actually, I can't say the numbers seem to be high. The numbers are not what I'm anticipating. So I'm going to go with 101.
Well, actually, talking about high numbers, this is the highest one thus far. There were 273 people who went with that. So means it's 2-2. This is your point, Sam. And that also means that you're up next for guessing the second Ferrari on P5 with Sainz.
Okay, I'm going to go high here. I'm going to say 212.
Okay, I was going to say 160.
Means that this point goes to Daniel because there were only 87 people who went with Sainz on P5.
Ah. Oh. Yeah.
Then
interesting.
We get to the second Red Bull, Perez, finishing on P6. It's Daniel who goes first.
Okay, yeah. I think this is a lot less, but I'm going to go with 105 people.
I am going to go with 186.
All right. Well, Daniel, you're only 9 away from the correct answer. It was 114.
Oh yeah. At least at this game, I have some luck.
Yeah, it's 4-2, and we're moving on to Russell, the highest finishing Mercedes on P7. Sam,
I'm gonna go with 74.
Okay, I'm going to go for a lot less. I think I predicted 10 people.
Okay, this time it's Sam. That's pretty close. You're only 10 away from the right answer. It's 84 people. So, quite a few compared to what Daniel, what you were thinking.
Yeah,
so this is Sam's point. So it's 3-4. You're keeping it quite close. Daniel, you're up next for the second Mercedes, Hamilton on P8.
Oh my goodness! Now I'm not going to think about other number because I thought about this earlier on, but I guess I'm going to go Hamilton 8th on 5 people.
Okay, I'm going to do 34.
Daniel, that's a very close guess. It was actually 6 people.
Whoa.
So you're only one away.
Wow.
Yeah. And what
I'm
we
really
usually,
surprised
do...
by the picks this weekend. I really am. Not what I accept, not at all what I expected.
It's going up and down, I agree. And and what we usually do when there's very few people that have something right, we also mention who those players were. So let's have a look at who put Hamilton on P8. So six people. That was Chip Kohofker from the Netherlands, Luther Ng from Singapore, Victori Kristinova from Czech Republic, Markis Korp from Greece, Alexandros Varsos, also from Greece, and Roman Blazek, also from Czech Republic. So those were the six players that put Hamilton on P8. Where did you guys have Hamilton? Because he was on none of our podiums.
I believe I had him P4 or P5.
Yeah, I had him P4 as well.
I also had him on P4. We really did make very similar predictions this weekend. All right, let's move to another tough one with Gasly on P9. Well, I'm saying tough. Let's see whether it's tough or not. But I think it's Sam that goes first.
I'm going to go with four people.
Okay, and given that I never much thought about putting Alpine on the top 10, I'm going with zero people. No one predicted him on at P9.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. Both of you will be very surprised to hear that. Very surprised to hear. Actually, I am surprised myself too. But there were 68 people who had Gasly on
what?
P9.
Oh my!
It's one of those ones that you have to check whether that's really true when it's coming out of my data set. So I did check, and it is true. There are actually really 68 people who went with that. So I also would have guessed a much lower number. But this point is Sam's point. So it's 5-4. Means it's still up for grabs because there are still two guesses left with P10 Alonso and the fastest lap, of course. So let's first go to Alonso, Daniel, on P10.
Okay, Alonso on P10, I think it was 15 people who put him there.
Okay, I am going to say 36.
Means we are at a draw, because it was 121
Ooh.
People that went with Alonso on P10. Quite a lot of people. Quite a lot of people, yeah. So... So it means it's actually 5-5, and it's gonna be decided by the fastest lap. We don't get that very regularly on the quiz.
We don't.
Yeah, it's gonna be an interesting one. And actually, Sam, since you started, means it's your turn to guess fastest lap for Norris.
Okay, I'm gonna go pretty high here. I'm gonna say 212.
Okay, I'm going to say 128.
Well, Daniel, you came very close to winning, it's going to go to Sam because you were not very far off. Yeah. It was 241 people who went with the Norris. It's actually interesting. There was more people who had Norris on fastest lap than there were people who went with Norris on P1, which doesn't happen very often. I mean, we've seen it a lot with Verstappen winning the race and getting fastest lap, and then usually it's actually more people who have... him on P1 rather than fastest lap, but apparently with Norris it's the other way around. But Sam, it means another episode, another Canadian anthem. I think let's not share my opinion, but actually you know in the first season you didn't get a lot of wins, but you've been getting a lot of wins recently.
I don't know what's happened. Maybe experience is finally kicking in. But I will say this, that you know what I take from this weekend alone, if the fluctuation in the points or the picks themselves are any indicator, you never this season it's anybody's game when it comes to not only forecast F1, but more importantly the season itself. It's been such an exciting season that even when we're doing this prediction game, you honestly, I'm surprised this weekend by the picks. And it's something where even the choices that people made were logical, because they could end up where they were.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's Well, I guess that sort of brings us also to next race weekend and talking about our predictions. And I don't know. I don't want to. This game will never give me a headache. But thinking about, I mean, I've been putting Verstappen consistently on P1, but I'm considering to go with something else for Monza, I suppose. Yeah. Well, we have some time to think about it, but not a lot either.
Well, look, we know Monza is always an exciting race. I mean, it never leaves. It's always exciting, always surprises, and I am really excited about it. I'm really looking forward to Monza. I think we keep saying that, but if this calendar is any indication, the season is any indication of the ups and downs, then you're going into a track where it definitely has shown that historically. So I think it may be the perfect storm, and I don't know who we'll be looking at on the podium, but I do know that I have a week, or well, actually, yeah, I have a little bit of time to think about that. I think we all do.
Daniel, where are you gonna put the Ferraris for Monza?
Oh, I don't think they're going to be nowhere near the top three this weekend. I don't know. I don't know my strategy, because I think that McLarens are going to have a pretty much better performance there, given the way that the track is designed and pretty much all straights and little curbs and all this stuff. But I don't know, the Ferraris are going to be, I don't know, between P4 and P7. I don't know, I gotta check during the weekend, and maybe FP1 and FP2 for me to get my prediction right.
I do got to give you some credit, actually, Daniel, because I'm looking at your historical picks right now, and I see that you actually you usually go with Verstappen on P1, but you actually did get the Leclerc win for Monaco, right?
Yeah, Leclerc win for Monaco. I don't remember what my exact thought was on that weekend, but the Ferraris were at the start of the season, they were performing a lot better than they're performing now. I guess it's coming back now, since Leclerc's P3 today, but then he was his home race, and he was doing, and he knows that he was needing that win that time. So I think I saw that come. I don't know, but Verstappen was always Verstappen was always my first choice, because you know, during 2023 when we were going to make the predictions, okay, the only right prediction that we know, okay, Verstappen P1, and then the other ones we're gonna check, but at least everybody had pretty much 25 points to begin with, and then after that, and maybe that was the case for the beginning of the season this year, but right now it's unpredictable. It's really nice, because I go with Verstappen and I think, okay, maybe not Verstappen, and I go with Norris and I say, okay, but maybe Norris is going to finish P7, and maybe Russell or Sainz is going to win it, so we don't know.
Right, so what was the only other time this season that you went with something else than a Verstappen win besides the Monaco race?
I don't actually...
Let's see how good your memory is.
Okay, I don't remember right now. I gotta check this out, maybe, but let's see. Maybe Catalunya? I don't know.
No, you went with a Norris win for Silverstone, actually.
Okay, yeah, Silverstone. Yeah, I thought that was Catalunya, because there was going... Things were starting to change, but yeah. Okay, maybe I'm not going to Verstappen the next weekend.
Yeah, I'm thinking, yeah, like I was saying, I'm thinking about the same thing too. But, well, yeah, like you said, Sam, a couple of days to think about it. And I'm definitely looking forward to the next weekend. And, I guess at this point, with how close the field is, I guess we all are. Perhaps not if you're only watching just for one particular driver, because whichever driver that is, he's going to have it difficult now. But super excited. And I don't know if there's anything else that we need to go over before we listen to Sam's anthem.
It's not every day. It's not often that the Canadian anthem is played so much. So especially in F1. So I'll take it once again.
I think for next season we got to come up with some sort of different format where if the guest wins, we listen to their national anthem, but Sam needs to needs to score like 3 wins to get her anthem being played or something, because it's getting too much for me.
Or maybe I can just pick the song choice. We can do that.
Yeah, we can. You can like pick a different classic for every Do you have a classic in mind for now, or do you want to stick with the anthem?
You know what? I'll think about that. And I think I'll make a song choice this time. Let's save everybody's ears to hear the Canadian anthem for this time around. And maybe I'll pick a song, and we'll leave it as a surprise for everybody right now.
All right. Sounds fair enough. I'm actually not sure whether with copyrights that's a very good idea. I'm not 100% sure.
Well, you can always sing if you want.
We can also stick with it. Yeah, I could, but I won't. Perhaps. I don't know. On the other hand, I don't know. It's Formula One, right? So, I mean, we play the anthem of the winner, right? So I guess it should be the right format. So maybe let's just stick with that. You can play the song in your head.
Sure. Sounds good.
All right. Well, hey, Daniel, thank you for coming on. It was great having you as a guest. And
thank you, Daniel.
Hear a little bit about, talk a little bit about Formula One with you. And I wish you best of luck with your predictions for next week. And I'm sure you'll be a guest on the podcast again at some point.
Okay. Thank you very much, Anton. Thank you very much, Sam, for the invitation. It was great to be in here with you guys. And best of luck for me in the next in the next predictions.
But, best of luck for all of us.
Yeah, but it was great talking to you guys and getting to know Sam and Anton. Great to be with you. And whenever you guys want, I can be here again. It was a pleasure being here with you guys.
Absolutely.
We'll talk again next week.
We sure will.